Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. Okay, the numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 trade sales for April 2012. And I noticed I've got a typo in the name of my spreadsheet here. Oops.
Oh, you do, yes.
It's like it's not 2102. Anyways, very interesting month on the trade side this time around, Chris. We've had times where, you know, gee, who's going to be the top, Marvel, DC, whatever. I don't think, matter of fact, I am certain we've never had somebody other than Marvel or DC top the trades list. I've actually got a worksheet in the Excel workbook here where I've got the history by month or whatever, and I'd been tracking DC, Marvel, and kind of everybody else, and had to go actually tweak that a little. Actually, I just fixed it by hand for the fact that the winner this month was not Marvel, was not DC, it was Image Comics.
But as you have it listed here as total units and percent of top trades by units, so it's not by dollars.
No, it is just by units. But I mean,
but they're close.
But I mean, we've had a couple of times where it's the same deal on the comic side, where by units it's one way, by dollars it's another way, and you know, you could argue which is the better way to count, and you can really fudge the, I don't say fudge the numbers, you can influence the dollar sales just by how much you're charging. You can influence both positively and negatively and stuff, whereas units are units are units. You sold a copy, you sold a copy. You know, so that's a little bit more of a level playing field. But, you know, it's interesting because, you know, Image had 28.26% of the total units sold for the top 300, 22.63% of the total dollars. Marvel came in second with 22.37% of the total units, but 27.79% of the total dollars. So it's almost a direct flip, you know, in terms of those percentages between Marvel and Image if you're looking at units or dollars. Whereas DC came in third place with 21.43% of the units and 25.18% of the dollars. So second by dollars, you know, third by units or whatever, whereas, again, Image and Marvel, you know, were first and second, you know, respectively on the two. But what's even more impressive is not just that Image came out on top, but over 84% of those sales for Image were Walking Dead.
Right.
So Kirkman alone, Walking Dead alone, had enough sales in terms of units to put it as the top publisher this month. And, I mean, it's just incredible. I mean, you would think you'd hit a point sooner or later where it's just, has it hit saturation? Have they sold as much as they're ever going to sell or whatever? Or maybe just a little bit more or whatever.
Right, we touched on that last month. We talked about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and but it looks like it hasn't.
Not even close. 15 of the top 20 slots went to Walking Dead. You know, going through the ones that are not Walking Dead in the top 20 is actually going to be probably the faster, and then we'll quickly rattle through the order of the issues and stuff. But we've got the top-selling DC for the month came in rank 4, and it was Flex Mentallo, Man of Muscle, deluxe hardcover.
That's a Grant Morrison, Frank Quietly book, yep.
5,845 units. At rank number 5, we've got Chew, Volume 5 trade paperback, 5,577 units.
From Image. That yes. Definitely helped Image, too.
Chew's one of its better sellers, I mean, in terms of showing up every month. DC came in at rank 6 with Cinderella Fables Are Forever, of course, from the Vertigo imprint. That's the trade paperback, with 4,639 units. And then down at rank 13, DC had Batman Incorporated Deluxe Hardcover Volume 1 with 3,594 units. That's all that... I missed one. The Daredevil Season 1 down at rank 19. The premier hardcover there, 2,887 units.
Right.
That's all that was able to get into the top 20 other than Walking Dead trade paperbacks.
Right.
I mean, that is just crazy.
That's nuts. When I saw these numbers, I couldn't believe it. And saw the ranking, you know.
The
second thing that hit me was I can't wait for May, you know. I can't wait for the DC trade paperbacks to show up and to see how they are going to rank with Walking Dead. So, I mean, April, this is great for Image. It's great for Walking Dead. But I'm jonesing for May, John. You know,
it's going to be very interesting next month to see how those new 52 volume ones do.
Yeah.
Because that's really going to be the first indication of how this stuff works in a collected format. And, you know, were there people that were just waiting on certain things for that?
Right.
You know, it'll put the monthly sales into a certain perspective that we just simply haven't had for the last 8 months.
Right.
Now, it was interesting because based on this landslide of Walking Dead on the top 20, I decided to chart out the sales of those trades over time, and I sent you a copy of this this chart. And, I mean, most of these follow the same basic pattern. Big splash when it comes in, kind of drops down, a little bit of a, you know, splash the next month, and then it kind of, you know, I don't say levels out, but then gets into kind of a rhythm with a couple of noticeable spikes when the first TV season started.
Right.
Again, with the second season, and then, of course, this month, where it just went nuts. I mean, everything there just shot up.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, if you look at the starting point for each of these things, or with the case of, I guess it's volume 6, the second month of sales, because I think it came out a little late at the in April, and most of its sales hit on May or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But there's pretty much a steady increase in the initial sales of the trades going over time.
Mm-hmm.
So you got that kind of upward trend. And then again, just a couple of incredible spikes here and there. And I mean, almost every month, almost every one of these trades shows up on the list. I don't know that it happens every month, but I mean, still, it is just incredible because, I mean, this month alone, it was 71,881 units just through those trade paperbacks.
This is a great chart to show in your column, I think, if I can say that.
We'll see if it makes it in. I just put the chart together right before we're recording. I had already submitted my column, and I shot it to him just saying, hey, you know, you might want to toss this in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It took me a little bit to play around to get this chart how it is, and I'm still not totally happy with it. I want to tweak how I build it and stuff, but that's just more kind of technical stuff behind the
right.
scenes. You know, abbreviate trade paperback to TPB or TP or something like that, just to where the captions and the legend isn't too crowded. And with 15 trades coming in over time, it gets kind of chaotic there as you get near the end.
Mm-hmm.
But I find charts like this really show the basic trend, because I mean, you can see the entire run of these trades kind of arcing up as you get towards the, you know, end of the third quarter of 2010.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's also a definite spike around, I guess, September of 2008. I don't know if that's when they first announced it might go to TV, but I think it might have been.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that would be. Maybe, you know, I'm trying to think, you know, 2007, 2008, I think is when, I could be wrong, could be a little earlier, but when Image and Kirkman really went after, you know, the hardcover volumes and also the omnibus. That's when they started coming out, and really not just the regular collected editions, but the bombardment of all things Walking Dead. I think that's when it kind of started.
That may be, yeah,
you know,
yeah. But it just really shows just what a juggernaut that property is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, his other more recent one of Thief of Thieves has already been picked up for a TV show.
Mm, good.
And it'll be interesting to see how it does,
mm-hmm.
both as a TV show and as a comic. I mean, it's got all of 3 issues out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Personally, I think it's a bad thing for the comic when it gets optioned that early in its life.
Yeah.
I mean, it hasn't really had time to become whatever it was going to become in its original format before getting adapted and changed into, you know, a live action, you know, or whatever, a TV show, movie, or what have you for other properties. So,
in 2008, in December, we had the Walking Dead Omnibus Volume 2.
Mm-hmm.
And also, let's see. Yeah, Volume 8 came out. Is that the one that we're looking at there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, just after 8. Yep. So, 8, 9, around that area.
Yeah.
So, yeah, things started picking up. I think that's when it finally got steam and everything. Yeah, for sure.
Well, it's interesting because there are these two spikes where the first volume basically sells, you know, again, at I guess it was around October-ish, September-October of 2010. It sold better than any of the first five volumes initially sold
mm-hmm.
in its first month. And then again, this month, Volume 1 did almost as well as I think it's Volume 6 did in its, you know, premiere month. Or mm-hmm. would have been, you know, it again, that's the one that had about 2,500 units 1 month and then shot up the next. Again, sometimes the way the reporting gets done, it may have just made it to a couple of stores, gotten invoiced in April, and then the lion's share in May.
Right, right.
But still, it's you know, interesting to see how almost the entire swarm moves, not in unison, but certainly in correlation.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And this is one of the few properties where almost every month since the first trade came out, it has been on the list every time, at
every
least
time.
One volume.
Yeah.
You know, the exception is September of 2004. I don't think it placed on that month.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it did, and I just need to clean up my data a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
What I found is usually the first volume will go under the, you know, title, subtitle, trade paperback format. And then when the second one comes out, it'll change to title, volume one, subtitle, you know,
right.
trade paperback. And that kind of messes up my data cleaning system a little bit. But, yeah, this is... I mean, I don't expect Walking Dead to do this kind of activity again in May. I mean, of course, I didn't expect it here in April either.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think what we're going to see at the top of the list next time is going to be new 52 stuff, almost
yeah.
certainly across the board.
Right. Well, and we see evidence that Marvel is on its way with the Avengers versus X-Men coming in at number 21, and that did 2,796 units. I mean, not very much, but... You know, people are excited for this event that's going to be going on, that's going on right now. So, you know, this is kind of like the prelude book.
What was in this one? This was,
let's find out. Let me.
Avengers, Children Crusade number 7, X-Men Schism number 5, Magneto Not a Hero number 1, X-Men Second Coming number 1, House of M number 8, Avengers X-Sanction number 1, and Material from Point 1 number 1. So pretty much just a random smattering of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But not something that I would necessarily call a cohesive collection. And some of that's coming out over the span of, I mean, originally came out over many, many years apart.
Yeah, it looks like it's like a get-you-up-to-date kind of thing of what's been going on in the X universe.
But, almost. I mean, that is the top-selling Marvel trade this month.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, on the comic side, Avengers versus X-Men doing gangbusters. Interestingly, it's not really giving the lift to Avengers or X-Men so far that, like, Civil War did back when it came out.
Right.
And I think we're seeing a lot of evidence of certain marketing gimmicks on the comic side not being as effective as they used to be. And there are a lot of Marvel titles that had, you know, some minor bumps this month because of the Avengers art appreciation variant covers they were doing. But you go back a couple of years when they were doing the like the zombie covers and stuff.
Right.
That would do like a 5,000 to 7,000 bump on some of those titles for that mm-hmm. issue. Here, you know, we're getting, you know, a minimal bump at best. It's just a matter of how many times can they go back to that well. And with the variant cover stuff, they've gone back to it a lot, and they've gone back to it, you know, pretty frequently and pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've got to wonder if that's part of why we're seeing a kind of a softening of sales to a degree, both on the comics list and on the trades list. Because, I mean, we should actually go through the different volumes of Walking Dead real quick.
Sure.
Because that first volume was the top seller at 12,323 units. And that's pretty impressive sales, you know, just regardless of content, I mean, for a trade to do that well. The fact that it's, you know, material that's been out 8 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that's 8 years and on the list damn near every month in that time. I mean, that's just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But then we drop down to a little below 9,000 with volume two of Walking Dead doing 8,955 units. Then we get a little above 7,000 with volume three. Again, these are all the trade paperbacks of Walking Dead doing 7,027 units. We skipped a couple of ranks because of the DC and Chew. We get volume 5 down at rank 7 doing 4,580 units. Then we get volume 15 doing 4,469 units. And we've talked a number of times on how the early issues do pretty well, the later issues do pretty well, and then it kind of, you know, does like a V sort of a thing in the middle, it seems
right.
like.
And you know, 15 is the latest trade paperback.
Exactly.
Right.
And we're almost due, I would think, for 16 in maybe another 2-3 months.
Yeah, let me look that up and see if I have it.
It seems to be like January and July or February, you know, September-ish type release schedule.
I have no Walking Dead on my schedule as of yet. So
seriously?
Yeah, nothing coming up unless I missed it. But yeah, it should be pretty soon.
That seems interesting. Well, Volume 15 collects 85 to 90. The latest issue of Walking Dead to come out was, I think, 96. So we may still be another issue or two before it's got enough to go collect into that. Yeah, 96 was the last one. We've got another week or two maybe before 97 comes out. But 91 to 96 would be enough. So, I mean, it could be any time now.
Yeah, yeah.
And based on how it's been trending up with that first month sales or whatever, I would expect 22,000 or greater.
Well, Volume 15 came out in December.
Was it December? Yeah, all right.
Mm-hmm. I collected up to 90. So, yeah, probably it should be on the next solicitations, I would all say, right. 16. Which should be in a week or two, yeah, so...
So volume 4, which is at rank number 9, we've got 4,115, volume 6, 4,066, volume 9, 3,774, volume 7, 3,667. Of course, we're kind of bouncing around on the issues or volume numbers here. So not strictly kind of from the beginning and from the end as new people are getting on board or other people are catching up. But kind of sort of close.
Mm-hmm.
Volume 10 came in at rank 14, 3,470. Volume 8, 3,303. Volume 14, 3,190. Volume 11, 3,047. And then at the bottom of the list, no, we got two more, sorry.
Two more.
Volume 12, 3,011. And now at the bottom of the list was volume 13, 2,884.
Mm-hmm.
Units, and these are all estimates, et cetera, but this is showing how just within the top 20, I mean, we drop, you know, 10,000 units. Now, granted, we had a pretty high starting point, but most of these things are you know, at that 2,000, 3,000 or below. Really, we get below 2,000 by rank 35. So, just in general, I don't think the collected editions have quite the sales, you know, pull or whatever that they had necessarily at one point, which really makes this, you know, wave of success of Walking Dead, you know, again, all the more impressive. Because, I mean, some of these things have been on the list, like Volume 1, 85 times before. Even Volume 15's been on the list 4 times before. So, it just seems like... no matter how Kirkman prints this stuff, it's just a license to make money or something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, further down on the list, the hardcovers also show up. They're down at ranks 77, 92, 118, 152, 157, and 254. So it looks like all seven of... Six of the seven trades, or six to seven hardcovers, excuse me, show up. Volume four does not.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of interesting. Surprised that didn't show up. But, I mean, again, it's not like it's just the trades that are doing gangbusters for Image and for Walking Dead. I mean, the other collected editions are doing pretty well, too.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, I think there's that, you know, maybe you go out and buy Volume 1 and trade, and you're like, hey, I can get the hardcovers, you know, for more of the collectible volume. And they don't seem to be slowing down at all, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the impressive part is, you know, once people get on board with this, you know, there's an astounding carryover from volume to volume. Mm-hmm. We've seen certainly cases in the past where there's a bump, you know, in the monthly sales as people have kind of caught up via the trade and decided to jump over because they can't wait.
Well, it also reminds me of, you know, about a year or two ago, we've always touched on, it's kind of slowed down lately, but, you know, with books like Bleach and Naruto and other things like that, where every time, you know, you've got a Viz book or a Tokyo Pop book, and it's up to volume 46 or something, and those books do very, very well. There's a great following for those books.
There is, but, I mean, if you go back a couple of years, when we'd be talking about the top 10, how many times did we go through and stumble over the pronunciation of some of these manga books?
That's true.
You know, Fruits Basket or whatever,
right,
which just seems grammatically incorrect to me in some level, and maybe it is, maybe it's not, whatever, but it does seem like not only has the output of that slowed down somewhat, but the sales level we're seeing on those have kind of dropped off a bit, too.
Well, like, here we go. We do have Bleach on here, Bleach Volume 39 from Viz for $9.99, showing up at rank 31. 2,222 estimated units. It's still doing pretty well. You know, it's up there with, you know, in the top 50 with some Marvel books and some Dark Horse as well. So it's not slowing down too much.
Well, if you look back around how it was doing around volume 16, 17, 18 and stuff,
yeah,
it was up above 4,000 units.
Right.
So,
and maybe because of, the big box stores, I mean, these are all pre-orders we're talking about, but, you know, maybe you're not exposed to it as much as you were inside a giant Borders or something like that. Because when I went to Borders, we talked about this before, I mean, you had that wall of manga staring right in the face. And there was, when I'd walk in and I'd go look at comics, there'd be two teenagers standing in front of the manga. And I go to my local library, which has got a great comic book selection, they've got all their manga there too, and without a doubt there's always kids checking it out, you know, and not so much with the, you know, Fantastic Four or Spider-Man on the other shelf. So,
well, I mean, that kind of begs the question of, with Borders closing down, I think Barnes and Noble may, I'm trying to think if it's closed a couple of stores or not, I mean, but it's about the only major bookstore kind of left out there.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, there were a lot of manga readers going through those mass market outlets that have been kind of cut off.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't really seen them kind of flocking to the direct market stores. And, you know, we're not seeing like a sudden uplift, not even sudden. I mean, there've been plenty of time for this. We haven't seen an influx of manga readers and sales,
mm-hmm,
as a result of that. And it's been not quite a year, but close to that. So there's, mm-hmm, certainly been time for these people to go, find a comic store and say, gee, let me get my Naruto, my Bleach, or, you know, whatever they wanted,
mm-hmm,
through that channel.
Interesting. Where has everybody gone? You know.
Yeah. Well, it makes me wonder if those readers have just been kind of lost.
Yeah.
Or are they going through like an Amazon or something like that? I mean,
they could. That's always true. Yeah.
It's very easy to say, well, you know, I can't go down to Borders, go pick up the latest, you know, manga du jour. But, you know, I can just pull up Amazon and it'll be here in a couple of days or whatever. So it was definitely an opportunity for Amazon or, you know, even the publishers themselves if they had a decent web store and direct order. Have you been reading any of the season ones? Because we've got that Daredevil there at rank 19.
I have not. I've got Daredevil. I ordered that for May, so I should be getting that with my next DCBS shipment.
I've been
because I'm a sucker for the yellow Daredevil.
I can understand that. Kind of a harsh color scheme, but hey, he's blind. I'll go with it.
But it's, you know, it's early. I love the, you know, early Daredevil. It's pretty cool stuff. You know, the yellow costume, it gets me every time. I got the, you know, I got the Masterworks and I got the Jeff Loeb, you know, Daredevil yellow, and anytime he shows up in yellow, I just kind of, I dig it. So it's coming, you know.
Cool.
Yeah.
I read it, I enjoyed it and stuff, and it seems that these season ones are doing all right for Marvel. I mean, they're not, you know, top of the charts or anything, but I don't know that anyone really should have expected that, including the people at Marvel, because they're putting some very good talent on it, but it's not like they're putting, I don't say they're not putting A-list talent on it, because again, I think they're putting very solid talent on it, but they're not putting, you know, the uber big name, you know, people on those books. In other words, it's not like the Earth One books that DC, well, has done one of so far, with Superman Earth One, where they put Straczynski on it. I mean, they put some definite name power behind those. I think they kind of dropped the ball on that with not having really followed those up in a timely manner over at DC. But, you know, they've got that Batman one in the works. We'll see how that does, you know, when it comes out. I think they've kind of clouded the issue a little bit by waiting until well after not only the new 52 is out, but, I mean, it'll be no sooner, no earlier than the new 52 Volume 1 collections by the time that Batman Earth 1 comes out, which is going to mean the Flashpoint or New Universe Batman or whatever you want to call him is going to be going up against this new Earth 1 Batman as alternate takes, you know, of the character, and that just seems like a confused marketing position to be in. But, you know, we'll see how that does.
Yeah, for sure. Can I mention a book real quick?
Certainly.
I am interested in rank 42, and that is Showcase Presents The Spectre for 1999 from DC, of course. It did 1,765 units, which I think is a very respectable showing for almost a C-list character. You know, he's not in the new 52. He hasn't really been around since Hal Jordan was Spectre, really. I mean, he's had a few showings here and there, but for the most part, you know, not that well known in the past couple years. And with all Showcase Presents, you know, it's classic stuff from the 1960s and 70s that may not to appeal to a larger, younger audience that are younger than you and me. And, you know, this stuff collects Showcase number 60 in 1966 and goes through his adventures through the 1970s. And it's a great character. It's one of my all-time favorite characters, John. That's why I'm very happy this book is out. And I really wish that DC would go back and finish up. I think they have to finish up the Golden Age Spectre, if I'm not mistaken. You know, this stuff is done by Gardner Fox and Michael Fleischer, and art by Murphy Anderson and the great Neil Adams and Jim Aparo, who does a great cover on this. And, of course, Spectre was created by Jerry Siegel, who is one half creator of Superman. I mean, this is great. You know, this is a Silver Age Adventures here, but he's such a great, cool character, you know. And I'm glad to see it selling so well. So, any thoughts on the Spectre?
He's the kind of character I think would be very interesting for DC to try to do, either as a TV show or as a like a movie or something, because he's got kind of that dark quality to him.
Did you see the animated Spectre backup that was on one of the movies?
I did.
Yeah, that was sweet. That was really good.
Well, and that's what's making me think that for like a cable channel or something, they could do a very kind of edgy take on the character. And it's one of those where I think there's there's obviously readers who are familiar with him and those who aren't. And I think there's probably more familiar with the character than you may give credit to because, I mean, Hal Jordan was the Spectre for a while. He was in, you know, the JSA for a bit. Jim Corrigan was in Gotham Central. As a matter of fact, two ranks above is that volume.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think the character's shown up on one of the cartoons, maybe. I could be wrong about that. I think I am wrong about that, actually. I think I'm thinking the animated stuff, not the actual, you know, the DVD animated stuff versus any of the cartoons they've done. Because it certainly, I don't think, would have fit in with, like, Brave and the Bold or anything. That would have been just wrong.
He is one of those odd characters, like a Dr. Fate, almost, that is so powerful and omnipotent that it'd be very hard to write for, I'd think, you know?
Well, I mean, if they do a take where it's you've got a very kind of literally haunted Jim Corrigan, you know, character in kind of the seedy side of a not so great, you know, metropolitan area or whatever, and the Spectre doesn't have quite that cosmic level of power, but is like a twisted, sadistic, you know, cartoon character, if you will, you know. And do all of the ironic punishment type stuff that the character did back in the day.
You know? And he's and like anything in religion these days, I mean, he's more of a religious character, and that can be a lightning rod for a lot of people these days. And you know, I look at the Spectre, and I this is my own take on it. I mean, there's many ways you can interpret many different characters, but I look at a character like Ghost Rider, and he is a spirit of vengeance from hell. And I look at the Spectre being the spirit of vengeance from heaven.
Yeah, very, very much so.
Yeah, and I think it's easier to talk about hell these days than it is to talk about God and Jesus and heaven.
I mean, you can play that element up or down as you see fit, but it's one of those characters that I really don't know if they've considered leveraging in a mass media, again, movies or television or whatever. But I really think kind of the let the punishment fit the crime aspect of the character and the supernatural ability to make that so could appeal to a very wide audience. But that's a character that they have tried a number of times in the comic to kind of put back out there. I mean, I can think of at least three or four different volumes of the Spectre that I probably have in my collection.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, a matter of fact, I think Mr. Terrific, the newer character, the newer version, was originally featured in one of the volumes of Spectre. That's where he was created or whatever. So, definitely interesting character, and the fact that, you know, that Showcase Presents did so well is pretty impressive. Again, not only just the character, but, you know, it's a black-and-white format book, I think. I think the Showcase stuff doesn't have quite the visibility and quite the, I don't say quite the appeal, but the shelf presence or whatever that, you know, it used to have at one point when they were coming out with a lot. You know, it used to be kind of the budget version of how to go get a lot of comics to read for really not much money. But I think as the frequency of them is kind of petered out, the lineup is just not so much in people's mind. But definitely interesting stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody's looking for some from good classic Silver Age, I think that'd be good stuff to start with for sure.
Yeah.
So what else we got on the list you want to rap about?
Let's see. I don't know. We got just tons of stuff here. We've got another Showcase Presents a little lower with The Losers. That's at rank 57, and that did 1,530 units. It's also interesting, kind of smack dab between the two, we've got Saga of the Swamp Thing, Volume 1 trade paperback, 1,619 units. That is covering, I believe, issues 20 to 27 of the series, which was, I think, one of the main kind of turning points for when it kind of became what it, you know, people classically think of as the Swamp Thing series.
Yeah, that's the Alan Moore stuff. They put all these out in a series. I'm staring at them right now in a series of six hardcovers, and it looks like DC is going to do all six volumes in trade paperback. So cool. That's good to see. So if you want to run out and get the – and the old trade paperbacks didn't include all the stories.
Really?
So, yeah. So for whatever reason, they didn't – you know, the prose pieces or the Crisis on Infinite Earths issue or, you know, whatever it was. And so I'm glad that DC went back and redid this stuff. And you know, what they didn't collect was the earlier stuff, you know, the Marty Pasco run. From issue, what, 1 to 20, when Alan Moore takes over. And I wish DC would go back and kind of, I don't know, do zero volumes or, you know, they had the Roots of the Swamp Thing stuff with the Bernie Wrightson stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but everything between the Roots of the Swamp Thing and the Alan Moore Swamp Thing has not been collected. And I wish DC would kind of go back and do that in that format. That would be nice. But it's not that good. That's probably why they didn't do it, you know.
I can understand that, but there's something to be said also for kind of the completest aspect of that.
I'm with you on that one. Yep. Hard to argue.
So we had a couple of big ticket items this time around. We had a couple of omnibuses. Matter of fact, I think we had five, maybe six omnibuses coming in at the $99.99 price point. We have the Amazing Spider-Man Omnibus Volume 2, rank 49. It did 1,671 units. We've got, also at that price point, X-Men Fatal Attractions hardcover. I don't think that's an actual omnibus, though.
No.
It's down at rank 160. It did 639 units. And then the Untold Tales of Spider-Man Omnibus at rank 167 with 601 units. And that Untold Tales of Spider-Man, that's the Kurt Busiek run. Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
Where it kind of fit between the panels of some of the older stuff.
Yes.
I remember reading those when they were coming out in the monthly format. And then at the $75 price point at rank 90, we've got the New Teen Titans Omnibus Volume 2 hardcover, 1,095 units. Rank 117, we got the Flash Omnibus by Geoff Johns, Volume 2 hardcover, 884 units. And then at rank 159, Ultimate Comics Avengers Omnibus hardcover, and it did, let's see, 640 units. So, you know, all said and done, we've got over 5,500 units that moved, you know, a $75 or nearly $100 price point. That may be about the most number of high-ticket items we've had in a month lately.
Yeah, that's a lot. Yeah, for sure. Is that Fatal Attraction stuff any good? I don't really recall any of that.
I'm trying to remember what was in that. What does?
Well, let me tell you. Uncanny X-Men 298 through 305, so it's right there at the turn. Annual 17. X-Factor 87 through 92, X-Men Unlimited from 1993, 1 and 2, X-Force number 25, X-Men, the 1991 series number 25, Wolverine number 75, and Excalibur number 71, 832 pages for that $100 price point.
Is, I recall this was okay stuff, but not, oh wow, you've got to go get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the fact that in the solicit they don't really mention the creators, not a great sign.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think who would have been on some of those issues.
Well, this is after I've got my Extinction Agenda, and that collects Uncanny 270 through 272. And this is Claremont, Louise Simonson, Jim Lee, Rob Liefeld, and Silvestri is on this. And then Age of Apocalypse. Oh, this is a big book. I've got this. Uncanny X-Men 320 through 321.
So this would be about halfway between
those two.
It's
halfway right there. Yep. So when I get it, I will place it between Extinction Agenda and Age of Apocalypse. So
that's the part that drives me nuts. And we've talked about this before with the way they name these things. Is,
yeah.
You know what? Where do you put them in your bookcase? How do you know what order to read them in? That kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It is just a little bit crazy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's see. What else do we got?
Let's move on.
Yeah, enough of that Marvel stuff.
Enough of that.
What do we have this time around from Boom? Not really a whole lot from Boom this time. A volume of Farscape and then Pete and Miriam graphic novel. I'm not even entirely sure what that is. Dark Horse had a couple of things on the list this time around. Top of it was Abe Sapien, Volume 2, Devil Does Not Jest, trade paperback, 2,596 units, and then Dollhouse Epitaphs, Volume 1, trade paperback, 2,184 units. We also have Volume 6 of Fear Agent, which I think is the final one.
I think that is.
Let's see, 1,273 units. Brody's Ghost number 3. This is by Mark Crilly, who I'm a huge fan of. He did Akiko, among other things.
Mm-hmm.
This is an original to digest property, and it did 915 units, which is too bad because I think it's brilliant stuff. And I mean, I haven't actually read Volume 3 yet. I've got it sitting here waiting to be read. But he's doing some great work on those. I really enjoyed the first two. And then we've got Avatar The Last Airbender Volume 1, Promise Part 1, trade paperback, a reorder activity of that. Seven times previously it's been on the list, so that makes this 8 times. 586 additional units. That's piled up to 9,319 units. So definitely some legs on that one.
You know what I'm kind of disappointed about? And I hate to say it because I really like IDW, but I'm really disappointed in the showing of 30 Days of Night Ongoing Volume 1. It's coming in at rank 119, and it's $17.99, 880 units. And, you know, Steve Niles is great and all, but I think I don't know why Ben Temple Smith is not on this, but I think if they were going to redo this as an ongoing, you would have gotten the original creative team on it. And, you know, Sam Keith is doing the art and the covers, and he's great, you know, and with macabre stuff and horror stuff. But, you know, it's not garnering the attention that the older classic stuff did. And I don't know why it's not, you know.
Can't really tell you on that because, I mean, for probably no surprise, I'm not reading that.
No, but I think that, you know, is it a disservice to the fan base? I mean, I don't know what it is because the original trilogy is very good stuff. Hmm. And the artwork is great. And, of course, you know, they had the movie off that and they had the second movie went right to DVD for whatever that's worth. But, yeah, I mean, you know, it for whatever reason, it's just not selling as well as they probably wanted it to. You know, and you wonder how long that 30 Days of Night Ongoing, which is the title of the book, is going to be ongoing. You know, it's almost an oxymoron if it ends at like issue 15, you know.
Yeah,
it's like they're shooting themselves in the foot right away.
Well, on the monthly side, it started at 8,327 units, and as of issue 6, which came out in April here, 4,085 units. So it's lost half its sales.
That's going down. Yep.
But, I mean, that's frankly not that uncommon. The other one that's...
I don't know, but it's odd that they would have done that, because 30 Days of Night has primarily been a miniseries property.
Yeah.
So why would they announce an ongoing series? You know, you know.
Well, I mean, that's the conundrum here is if you've got something that's doing well as a miniseries, you want to kind of leverage that, and
right.
If it's doing well, why not try it as an ongoing series? But it could be the fact that it's a miniseries that people are saying, five issues, six issues, or whatever the length of the miniseries is. That's not that big of an investment. I'll try it. Whereas the whole notion that it's ongoing could scare some people off.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that at the major publishers, more so Marvel and DC, a little bit less so at IDW, Image, Dark Horse, Boom, and Dynamite, and it's a totally different ballgame for the smaller ones. But at the bigger publishers, I really think that the miniseries format is not really as functional as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly over at DC, where none of the miniseries around the new 52 have been doing very well. And it's going to be very interesting to see how those specific properties do in a collected format. And I don't know when we're going to see the first of those, like Penguin, the Ray. I'm trying to remember what some of the other Huntress.
I have not seen anything from the Ray yet. That's very interesting you mentioned that.
But keep an eye on those miniseries they've done, because they've not done gangbusters on the monthly side, and the series of miniseries disguised as an ongoing series of DC Universe Presents, it's not doing that well either.
Is that a Pain and Prejudice from Penguin?
Penguin Pain and Prejudice, yes.
That is coming out in September, okay, along with Joker's Asylum Penguin number 1.
All right, that was...
That is collected.
Yeah, the Joker's Asylum one was one of the fifth week events from a couple of years back.
Yep.
But it's going to be interesting to see how Thunder Agents, Huntress, Legion Secret Origin, you know, some of those other limited series that they've done as part of the new 50, or in conjunction with the new 52, how those do, because if they don't do particularly well on the collected side, you know, I would really question if DC should continue with those miniseries or whatever. But if they don't do that, and if DC Universe Presents isn't panning out for them, and frankly it is not, then they've got to resort to kind of like these National Comics one-shots to get like Kid Eternity and some of these other characters out there. And maybe that'll work, maybe that won't. But then they're in the position of how do they get new properties out there? How do they test the waters on stuff? And I don't know. You know, you look at something again like 30 Days of Night, where it was doing pretty good as a series of miniseries. You kick it to ongoing, and then not so much. Flip side of that, or another side of that, I should say, I don't know if it's necessarily the flip side of that, is Red 5 Comics has been taking Atomic Robo, which was a series of miniseries, kept the series of miniseries going, and have started up a monthly comic. Now, I think only one issue of that has come out so far. Matter of fact, I don't think any came out in April, and, you know, so that makes me question, you know, how quickly they're going to get those out, which is unfortunate, because I'm loving the stuff.
Are you? Is it good stuff?
Oh, have you not read Atomic Robo?
I have not, no.
Do so. It is. Okay. It's funny stuff. It's lighthearted. It's about a living robot kind of character. You know how Hellboy is set in like this supernatural kind of a world?
Yeah.
Take Hellboy out, put Atomic Robo in, instead of this dark, you know, supernatural world, it's a mad scientist kind of a world.
Okay.
In other words, they're mad scientists running around, super sciences all over the place or whatever. And he's got the "you've got to be kidding me" kind of, you know, aspect to it. It's fun.
Okay. That sounds fun, yeah.
Almost, again, the Hellboy setup to a degree, but more the Eureka TV show mindset, if you will.
Oh, okay. That'll be good then. Yeah.
They've had 6 miniseries. I've loved them all. And I'm glad with the ongoing. But I think that kind of transition is a tough thing to do. And then it's a question of can you keep going with that or not? So... the other one that's kind of interesting from IDW is at rank 161, and that's Cold War Volume 1 trade paperback, 636 units. That was the John Byrne miniseries they did.
Oh, okay.
That was kind of sort of the 60s, 70s era, you know, James Bondish sort of character. And it's John Byrne, so either you're going to really like that or you're really not, depending how you feel about John Byrne. I don't think it was some of his best stuff. I certainly don't think it was some of his worst stuff either. But you know,
I'll have to check that out, because I don't know. I'm kind of between. I do like some of his stuff and some stuff I don't. You know, I can go. I can take him or leave him.
When he's on his game, he does some great stuff. I'm looking forward to Trio when it comes out. I mean, he hasn't done superhero stuff in a while.
Yeah, I kind of look at. I mean, I don't know, this may be sacrilegious, but I kind of look at John Byrne the same way I do with Mark Waid. Some stuff I like, some stuff I don't like. You know?
Fair enough. Most of Mark Waid's stuff I like.
Most of it I like. No, and same with John Byrne. Most of what I read by him is good. Yeah.
The way I would really differentiate those two is sometimes John Byrne just says some of the "you've got to be kidding me" type things in, you know, on the internet or whatever.
I
can't believe he just said that. And for the most part, Mark Waid doesn't do that. You know, some people may not agree with him. Some people may, you know, not care for his stand on, you know, digital comics or, you know, this, that, or the other. But I don't think anyone really tends to read Mark Waid's posts thinking, wow, this guy just needs to be fitted for a straitjacket. Whereas occasionally there are other creators like John Byrne where, you know, you got to wonder.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing that's kind of interesting is Dark Horse has all three volumes of Mass Effect trade paperback on the list this time around. It's based on the video game. We've got Volume 3 at rank 37. That's the new release that's got 1,900 units. Volume 2 is down at rank 258 with 377 units of reorder activity, bringing its known reported sales total to 2,541 units. And then Volume 1, a couple of ranks above that, at rank 253, 379 estimated units of reorder activity. Actually, no, that's not showing up as reorder activity. That's another one where it was probably just Mass Effect Redemption originally.
Okay.
Now it's Volume 1 Redemption. That drives me nuts.
I've got a dumb question. Is this the video game?
Yes.
Okay. All right, not so dumb. I don't play video games, so.
It's got the lead writer from the video game actually doing the writing on this stuff, and it ties into what BioWare is doing with the game.
Okay.
And I think it's kind of cool when they've got stories that tie in like that between the different medias. I think it could also be very counterproductive at times.
Mm-hmm.
Depending...
Star Wars, they've done that with Star Wars and Old Republic. And, of course, Microsoft and Marvel do Halo.
Right.
So, yeah, there's some tie-ins for sure. Mm-hmm. And there's other ones out there, we know.
It just comes down to, are you telling any key plot points, you know, in one of the formats and not the other?
Mm-hmm.
I mention that because I'm a big fan of the Young Justice cartoon, which just started its second season. They've got a video game that's going to happen between those two seasons. And apparently the tagline is someone rises, someone dies, and something else happens or whatever.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, I'm not planning on getting or buying or playing the video game. So
right.
If somebody dies in the video game, how am I going to know?
That's true.
You know, so you got to be careful with that. Another showcase I want to mention real quick because it's great material is at rank 54, and that showcase presents All-Star Squadron Volume 1. 1,569 units. Big fan of All-Star Squadron. Roy Thomas did some great work on Earth 2 at that point in time. And this mm-hmm. has the first 18 issues plus an issue of from Justice League of America. And I think it would be probably the next volume, which would have the JLA, JSA, All-Star Squadron team-up that crossed through the two books for five issues where they went up against the crime syndicate. I loved that five-part story. It was great stuff.
I really wish this was in color, though, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't
know.
Understand
maybe,
that.
Maybe in the future it will, you know? You can always hope.
I would hope so, but, you know, it's one of those things that they're doing so few things. We talked last month about the Chronicles format.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're, again, doing early Silver Age there. But they've got, again, this dead zone almost between the late 70s, early to mid-80s, where there's just a ton of material that hasn't been really, you know, effectively reprinted yet. I mean, this is one of the first reprintings of the All-Star Squadron material, I believe.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Right.
And, I mean, that was coming out in, it started in 1980. So, you know, they've had time to reprint this, and, you know, I'm glad they're doing it at least at all. Again, I would prefer color as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
because they've had the JLA JSA team up books, and, you know, they just recently did All Star Comics as well. That was a great two volume trade paperback.
They came out with that a couple of years ago, yeah.
They had a couple of years ago, and then they repackaged it, and this came out last September. the showcase of mm-hmm. that stuff in black and white. And so,
but don't you think right now, with the new Earth 2 and World's Finest comics having just come out, this would have been a great time to have done a series of, granted, it's a different Earth 2, but still, they could have done a sequence of the All-Star Squadron trade paperbacks in color, Infinity Inc. They'd already done the Huntress stuff, which was the backup from Wonder Woman. There was the Dr. Fate stuff that was a backup in The Flash, and the Mr. and Mrs. Superman, I think, was in Superman Family. There were other things. They could have almost rounded out a lot of the original Earth 2 stuff.
Well, Infinity Inc. has been coming out in hardcover.
Yeah, you're right.
Volume 1 is out. Volume 2 is coming out later in July. And those will get reprinted and trade paperback eventually.
Yeah.
But yeah, but it won't be able to black and white. I mean, that's the only thing. I kind of wish there was more of a, you know, cohesiveness, I guess, you know, or continuity with these books.
Yeah.
You know, that's all.
Well, some kind of a game plan of when are they going to be coming out and getting people on a reading path or a reading plan or something.
Mm-hmm.
It seems at times that the collected edition publishing plan, at least from my perspective, hopefully not from yours because you follow it a lot closer than I do, but it almost seems random.
No, it's whacked.
That's unfortunate because
I know.
It seems to me that they should be gearing people up such that if you like whatever, it's like, okay, here's this reading path, be it for Earth 2, be it for Batman stuff, be it for Superman, Legion, you know, whatever franchise or type of story or what have you, that
right.
they could have a, hey, just kind of budget, you know, we're going to be doing this every couple of months, every quarter you'd have a new thing to pick up, or whatever would seem to be a manageable a reading plan or something.
Right.
You know, and kind of get people into a habitual buying pattern, because I mean, it seems to me that comic readers in that habitual buying pattern kind of go hand in hand. And if you could take advantage of that or leverage that on the trade side, that just seems like a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
So,
you know, what kind of kills me is Marvel's masterworks. You know, I like the hardcover. I understand why they do a variant. Same with their omnibus, they do the variant. But when they release it in trade paperback, do they really need a variant trade paperback? You know, that's kind of odd. And why they are releasing the trade paperbacks of the Masterworks in the same order they're releasing the hardcovers, or had released the hardcovers in the past, that's just odd too. You know, you'd think with the Captain America movie, they would release the first four Masterworks in trade paperback form in time for the movie. You know, instead of volume 3, because that's what's on the schedule, and that's what they have to put out that month.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you know, like we had, I don't know, it's just, why not have a soft cover Avengers Masterwork out, you know, it came out a couple years ago, but why not have another one in the month of May, you know, but if they could go by the schedule, it won't be out until, you know, 6 months from now. You know, the next one. It's just not in the queue yet. We'll throw that out and just put it out. Who cares about the variant volume order, you know, when it comes to the trades?
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because around the time the Captain America movie was coming out and a couple of the others, months prior, they were doing about a bazillion Captain America one-shots and miniseries or whatever, so they'd be collected and be able to be out by the time the movie came out. And they've done a little of that with, like, the Avengers Origins stuff or whatnot, but not really kind of that flood of material timed for the Avenger movie that just opened.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I look at the opening weekend figures for the Avengers movie, which are just insane. I think they estimated about 25.6 million tickets were sold,
mm-hmm.
based on how much the box office brought in, divided by the average ticket price, etc. So let's just say 25 million people have gone already in the opening weekend to see the Avengers. Now, I don't expect all of those people to suddenly convert to comic book fans saying, wow, I've got to go read, you know, these comic books or trade paperbacks or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm not seeing any kind of corresponding bump on any of the Avengers stuff for the most part, and that's even factoring in the Avengers versus X-Men event going on. There is a bump, but clearly attributed to that, but nothing that it's, wow, there's an influx for this. And it's clear they're making changes to the Marvel Universe for people theoretically coming in from the movies. I mean, the Battle Scars miniseries is a clear example of that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we've gone back the last many times movies have come out and said, you know, they've got this huge, huge, again, 25 million potential audience. We can't seem to leverage any of that getting them into comic stores.
But as we talked about at the top of the show and on your chart, Kirkman is getting his bump with Walking Dead. So why can't Marvel do it with the Avengers? Why can't Batman do it with Dark Knight?
Well, there's a clear difference. We're getting close to Walking Dead 100.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's going to have about a bazillion covers. But aside from that, Kirkman has steered clear from sales gimmicks, cover gimmicks, marketing stunts, that kind of stuff.
No, I disagree with that. Look at all the versions he's put out, the hardcovers, the omnibus.
There's reprinting and stuff, but there's not the chromium covers, there's not the hologram covers, like the Marvel Zombie covers they did, followed by the whatever.
Yeah.
So it's not that he's not reprinting it, or, I mean, The Walking Dead Weekly is a prime example of that, too.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that makes something like Sin City, Walking Dead, 300, Watchmen, different than Avengers, Batman, Iron Man, those all have a very clear, defined storyline, a timeline.
Mm-hmm.
You start at Walking Dead number one, you go up through whatever the current issue is. Now, do you do it in trade, hardcover, omnibus, compendium, the weekly reprint, or whatever? Well, that's mm-hmm. up to you. But the point is, there is a beginning, a really long set of the middle stuff, and whatever the current end-ish point is. Not to say it's a the end, but your current point.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas for the Avengers, well, do you get Secret Avengers, Mighty Avengers, New Avengers, Avengers...
Ultimate
Avengers, yeah. Avengers Academy, Dark Avengers, Avenging Avengers, or, you know, what have you.
Well, I think that's why we've seen in the past, whether it be, you know, the Captain America movie, the Avengers movie, the Spider-Man, the omnibus has always come out of the classic 1960s material, and that may not always appeal to the new person who has just seen the Spider-Man movie and wants to go read some Spider-Man, and he sees the giant omnibus of stuff from 1963 through 1965, you know? So,
well,
look at the Avengers. I mean, what I'm kind of getting at is every movie we've been getting, we get a giant Uber omnibus. The omnibus for the Avengers came out in February. What we are getting this week, the week of Wednesday, May 9th, is the Avengers The Crossing.
Yeah, and that's a bad pick for that.
Yeah, just an odd pick. A good storyline, an okay storyline, but, you know, just a little strange.
Well, I mean, you look at rank 132 here, and we've got Avengers Mythos hardcover.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that was the painted style. Yeah. Frankly, it didn't work for me.
No.
749 units.
Right.
New hardcover. It's got art style that, you know, could appeal to some people, whatever. And again, there's a bazillion people going and seeing the movie.
Right.
And Store said, nah, I don't think this is what we need. I think part of it is lack of good entry points, lack of a clear, if you've watched the movie, this is what you should read next. I think Avengers Assemble, which was an incredibly poorly marketed comic,
mm-hmm.
because it is the movie character, or the characters that are in the movie, but the comic book versions of them, as a new team, and that just started up March, I think. Let me take a look at the comic side of that. And that's something that I think a lot of people couldn't figure out, if it was going to be, you know, a movie continuity, a comic continuity, a kid's book, or what it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
It went from 1,893 units on the first issue, dropped by 47.45% on the second issue to 53,024 units. Second issues of a new Avenger title featuring the very characters from the movie. And it that one hit stores April 11th.
Mm-hmm.
So was the timing just not right? I mean, I don't know. But, I mean, that to me is a little alarming.
Yeah.
particularly given the whole, you know, Avengers versus X-Men kind of, I don't say fiasco or whatever going on, but you know what I mean, the hype.
Storyline, right. Well, speaking of, okay, here's a quick list of, from what came out May 2nd, okay, for Avengers only. Avengers X Sanction hardcover, okay, mm-hmm. That's leading kind of, that's a week,
that's
week
into
issue.
The Avengers the versus stuff, X-Men, right. Yeah.
Avengers Kree Skrull War, a new printing of that hardcover, okay, the classics, that's fantastic stuff, no mm-hmm. doubt about it. Avengers Assemble Volume 3, that's the 1998 series, collecting 24 through 34 and a couple of Thunderbolt issues. Marvel's Avengers Furies Big Week, which ties directly into all the movies. That's good to see out there. We had a Hulk book come out, no big deal. And then this week, the week after the movie, The Crossing comes out this week. Marvel Masterworks, The Avengers Volume 12, which also collects the Avengers Defenders War, which is very good.
But shouldn't they have had this stuff already in the store this past weekend?
Yeah,
for
Free right.
Comic Book Day?
And free, that's my point. I wrote that on my blog. Yeah, the Free Comic Book Day, right. You know?
25 million tickets mm-hmm. sold mm-hmm. opening weekend for the biggest opening weekend I think we've had all year. I mean, certainly one of the biggest superhero opening movies.
I think it's they announced it as the biggest, yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know that it's something that can be leveraged or will be leveraged into increasing comic sales.
I don't know. I mean, clearly, we talk about it every summer, it seems we talk about it, you know?
Yeah. Hopefully, long-term, it'll have some benefits. Certainly, I think it makes people more predisposed to read comics, but mm-hmm. there's predisposed and then there's actually reading comics. So, big price points this time around. Very popular was the $19.99 price point. Mm-hmm. 55 items at that. 40 were at the $14.99 price point. 30 at the $24.99 price point. Let's see, 22 at the $29.99 price point. 18 at the $12.99 price point, and then from there it kind of drops off. So I mean, really, the popular price points are the lower ones for the most part, and I'm good with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's always nice to see. And again, we had a surprising number of. You know, three at nearly $100 and three at the $75, so quite a few of the high-ticket items this time around.
Well, that's one thing I was going to touch on was that 30 Days of Night came in at $17.99. Awfully, you know, to me that's a little high for that. You know, $14.99 or, you know, we've seen so many volume ones at that $9.99 or $10.99 price point, you know, and that may have hurt their sales too, but maybe they're trying to make it up because it wasn't selling on the... on this issue, single issue side, you know?
Yeah, but you look at how, again, that first volume of Walking Dead was kind of bargain priced at $9.99. Mm-hmm. A lot of the Vertigo first issues are that way.
The Boom Studio was ones, we've talked about those before.
Yeah, and it gets people kind of in the door. And mm-hmm. if people don't read that first volume, they're probably not going to read the second.
Right.
And witness to that is again, when we were talking about that X-Men trade of, you know, where does this fit in the sequence? They've stopped numbering those collections for that very reason.
Mm-hmm.
Make them all seem like volume ones.
Mm-hmm.
If that's what you got to do, that's what you got to do. But I don't know if that's the right approach or not. I don't know. It seems a little, I don't see dishonest, but deceptive.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
no, it does.
If you're going to name every trade for most superhero things after whatever the story arc is, it reinforces the perception that people are writing for the trade, and it goes against the fact that these are happening in a particular sequence on the monthly side that they're really trying to blatantly downplay on the collected side.
Mm-hmm.
So it just seems like a very confused marketing message that readers are probably not aware of, but kind of sense anyways on a subconscious level, I think.
Well, that's why we're here. To help them out.
To point it out and make it blatantly obvious and really cheese people off. So.
When in doubt, listen to Comic Book Page and Collected Comics Library, right?
Yeah.
That's what you gotta do. We'll help you.
Speaking of which, what do you got coming up on your show?
This week I just did. I'm putting out my second round of podcasts with Jim Segulin from Raging Bullets and Pants from Comic Geek Speak. There, it's going out this week.
Cool.
And I kind of waited because so much was going on last week. I was going to put it out last week, the first week of May. But, you know, I'm like, there's so much going on. I want to wait until after Free Comic Book Day. I knew I was going to see the Avengers with my son. So I talk a lot about that on the show, too. So it's all, and I throw the interviews in there as well. So it's about I clocked it out at 59:59. So just a hair under.
Just under
one
an hour.
I know. So that is out. And, yeah, so I talk about the Avengers movie and I also read, this is kind of interesting, John, I reread the Slings and Arrows guidebook, which is fantastic one. I pulled it out because I wanted to see what their kind of take was on the Avengers series. And they can be kind of hard-hitting, the guys that do it. They can be very critical. And sure enough, they were really, really critical on the original run of the Avengers. Not only the Stan Lee, but a lot of the Roy Thomas stuff. You know, the Englehart stuff, very interesting. So I read that over my podcast, just the first series. So it's about a 10-minute long, read it verbatim kind of thing. And I think, you know, you get some insight about how, you know, the hits and misses of the series are.
Yeah.
And speaking of collected editions, you know, the best stuff, and I wrote this on the blog last week. It's funny, I did my blog, right? And I kind of did a search for some of the better Avengers storylines out there. And you kind of know what they are. And then I compiled my own list. And sure enough, it matched up. And then I read the Slings and Arrows criticism. And sure enough, you know, the best Avengers collected editions are out there right now. And as I wrote in my blog, Avengers Defenders War, The Serpent Crown, The Korvac Saga Classic, and The Bride of Ultron, which is getting a new collection later on in the year. And then my ultimate favorite Avengers storyline of all time is Under Siege, or Siege of the Avengers Mansion. And, you know, all those stories are out or coming out. And so you don't have to go back and get the Masterworks or The Crossing or whatever, but go get these certain storylines, and I think you will not be disappointed.
Yeah, you know? Definitely.
Good stuff.
Cool.
What about you? What's coming up?
Let's see. This is going to air after the next Weekly Comics Spotlight I record. So we're going to have reviewed Earth 2, World's Finest, Dial H, GI Combat, Exiled, and Exo Manowar.
Oh, wow. A lot of good stuff.
Six new number ones. We're doing all four of the Wave 2 ones that are hitting in that same week, and then we'll hit the other ones when they come out.
And you're doing all the Valiant ones then?
I think we're gonna try to do that.
Yeah, cool.
You know, I really liked Valiant back in the day. You know, so I'm really hoping they come out of the gate strong, and you know, there's a receptive audience for them. I think that'd just be good for everybody to have another strong player out there, particularly one that's not trying to expand too wildly or anything like that. And then next week we're going to do Green Lantern number 9, Avenging Spider-Man number 7, and Mind the Gap number 1. We've also got the not only do we do the monthly previews teleconference and previews episode, which we just did a week or so back, we're doing now 2 weeks after that on the Sunday night just a Talking Comics kind of teleconference. Which, of course, you are invited as well, Chris. We're going to be doing that on May 13th.
I already told Randy I've got a baseball game.
Ah.
Sunday nights are not good, man.
Yeah, well, they're not great for me either. I'm pushing to get that to another night if we can. But
yeah.
It's fun stuff because a bunch of us just get on Skype for a couple hours and just talk comics.
Wait, it's going to be May 13th?
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be the week after.
Because
the week after... I'm sorry, we're kind of going off on a tangent here. May 20th.
Well, and the irony is this will probably air after that, so...
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
People should have listened should have joined us for the teleconference. We're doing those 2 weeks after the previews one every month anyways.
I'm sorry, okay.
But bottom line is, you know, you've got the the second Friday after previews comes out that we do the teleconference to talk about that. Or 2 Sundays after that is when we do the kind of free-for-all discussion. We got the forum going, that kind of stuff. Pretty much same old, same old. I'm still reading tons of comics, trying to keep up every week. That's easier some weeks than others, but it's all good.
I am very behind on my comic book reading.
You know what my secret is? What? Don't get behind. And if you don't do, catch up.
Catch up. I'm going to try and catch up this week. I was going to read tonight, then I realized I had a podcast with you. So.
Yeah. What's funny, I've still got all those Wave 2 number ones to read before I record with Bob night after tomorrow or whatever. So.
I did read the Omega Effect little mini with Avenging Spider-Man, Punisher, and Daredevil last night.
Mm-hmm.
Neat little story. It takes place in the course of one night.
Yep.
3 issues. Lots of fun. And spoilers, nothing gets resolved.
Yeah. We reviewed the Punisher issue.
Yeah.
And that actually, I was pleased with that. When I was out for Free Comic Book Day, picked up issues, I think, 4, 5, 6, 8, and 9. I still need to find number 7. Because I had dropped it with 3, because it's like, is the Punisher ever going to show up at that point? But I like 10 enough that I figured I'd give it another shot. And if I get that 7th and read through and I like it, I may put that back on my list.
Mm-hmm. It's so okay. Of the 3 of that little miniseries, and I don't know how the hell they're going to collect that, but I liked Spider-Man the best.
I can see that. Mm-hmm. Did you read the Daredevil 10.1 issue?
No, I did not. I know I have to believe that.
It was a good 0.1 issue, and it really set up the story well.
Okay.
And what's interesting is on the monthly side, those 3 issues all had noticeable bumps.
Okay.
Major bumps. Not just because of the Omega Effect crossover, that's almost incidental, but there were a couple of variant covers on each of those that helped boost those. But, I mean, the whole point of that kind of a thing is to get readers of one title into the others and trying them out. So
10.1, if they ever collect into a little mini trade, that would be in it then, too.
Almost certainly.
Yeah, okay.
Because it really not only sets up Daredevil, but sets up what the drive is and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, that story's been in the background of Daredevil.
Yeah.
You know, of what's been going, if you've been reading Daredevil, that's kind of in the background of the Fantastic Four, medallion or whatever it is, the drive, so it's been there, so.
But this, the one issue basically summed it up for new readers.
Right, okay.
So, it's good stuff.
Cool.
Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that'll do it, man.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by John Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you're in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. If you're a resident of some other space-time continuum, please limit any actions you may take to that alternate reality. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes to 2 decimal places, and therefore there's a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. For months in which no issue of Batman or Detective shipped, Batman: The Battle for the Cowl was used instead. The title used as the key title is irrelevant. If you do not understand why or do not believe this, please consider taking a refresher course on basic algebra. Math is fun, but only if you understand it. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Sell-through information is not currently available, and we limit our reporting to the available information. If, however, you enjoy fiction, please listen to this preview spotlight for our recommendations of upcoming comic books. anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications that at least one retailer may have excessive amounts of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold to Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month in question. The list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to the retailers for the month in question. More than 300 graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of the top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 100, 50, 25, or as few as 10 items on the list. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know, has not been invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic book, graphic novel, or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 300 graphic novels and collected edition lists are included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. For some strange reason, Diamond doesn't report on sales through competing distributors. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any item sold outside of Diamond Comics' distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. We limit this report to the available data. If more data becomes available, we'd be happy to include it. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for. No amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is inapplicable in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there. I have neither the time nor the interest in engaging in pointless debates in this hypothetical reality. There are no guarantees of accuracy, reliability, completeness, or timeliness of any of the information given in the course of this discussion. We are human, and sometimes we make mistakes. We appreciate your understanding in this area. Any statements that may contain projections or other predictions about future events should be viewed as opinions that are subject to change as new information becomes available. Actual events may unfold in unexpected ways. As Doc Brown once said, the future is what you make of it. If any statements are contradicted or contested, the participants of the discussion may disavow any knowledge of those statements.